We had left off, just to recap very briefly, at the end of the last week, we're at the end of the Tosfos on Pafeis and Beis, Dibur HaMachzel Ela. And what, just to sort of set things up, the Gemara had recorded a machloka about the individual who was in a trickling urine during his amida and stops, and now he resumes because he has to go back to the beginning. So the Gemara initially had said, is this in fact a machloka? Whether Shal Kedin Gemara Skula has to go back, if you interrupt long enough to finish the entire mitzvah, you have to go back to the beginning, or not. That's what they suggested the debate was. And the Gemara now says, no, the debate is not about that. Everybody agrees that you do, the way it's presented, Gemara, Shal Kedin Gemara Skula, if you delay long enough, you have to go back to the beginning. And then the Gemara says the machlokis is whether or not the person is considered a gabra, a chazi, or not a gabra chazi. Is he ra'oi in principle? Is he so unra'oi to daven at the time that it marks an interruption and you have to go back to the beginning? Or do we say that even though he can't daven right then, that's the rabbanon, it's only prohibited to daven if there's a full stream of urine that we show him, say, kinege ha'amun. So that's the way the Gemara presented the question. Larry, question?
He said it's a halacha in specific instances, wasn't across the board. Right?
Well, what Tosus had said.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So what, how does it apply to one in the middle of Shema and two in Birchos Kriya Shema, before Shema?
Is that like halacha like the question today?
It was. Yeah,
yeah, I know
what I did.
So the answer will be, the question is asked in Tfilah, the Shulchan Aruch.
Like, let's say you had to stop in the first paragraph of Shema, or in one of the paragraphs of
Shema.
So the
answer is, I'm pretty sure that everybody in Shulchan Aruch Paskim, both Mechaber and Rama, Kriya Shema, in this circumstance, you're a doctor, there's a cardiac emergency outside, you do not go back to the beginning. You don't have to.
You resume, like, if you were in the middle of the first
Parsha,
you resume where you left off.
Okay. You're not sure where in the first Parsha, you go back to the beginning.
Right,
as we have explored once before.
But
the reason is, I believe that the Mechaber, I think, splits the psalm between Kriya Shema and Tfila. The Ramah doesn't spell out, the Ramah's position seems to be consistent across the board, like Tosos, that it all depends upon whether you're a gabra chazi or not a gabra chazi. So if you're a doctor stopping for emergency, you're not unra'oi, you're not unfit to be reading Kriya Shema at the time. You just, there's a mitzvah to interrupt, but we wouldn't say that you're not ra'oi to say Kriya Shema at the time, so therefore you would not go back to the beginning. And I think, I believe the Mechaber splits between Kriya Shema and Tfila, so this happens to be Kriya Shema.
And when you do the Shmicha school, Tfila, you just stop with one answer, I assume. So let's say you stop the Shmona Esrei.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no option to do it because you can't repeat the bracha.
Because
you finish the bracha, right? Shmicha school of Tfila is a great thing, but it's not enough to repeat a bracha.
It's a Shmona Esrei. You're in the middle of Shmona Esrei.
Right.
And you had a cardiac emergency.
So the Ramos Psah, I believe the way the Mishnah Berurah, the way everybody understands Ramah's Tzad, is that you don't go back to the beginning. You take care of your, even if Shal Kedei Ligmar Skula. In other words, the only thing you're allowed to break your Shmona Esrei in between, which I think we haven't done yet, it's going to be in the fourth or fifth parak, probably the fourth parak, fifth parak, is that even a Melech Shal B'Shlomo, assuming the Melech's not going to kill you if you don't respond, you don't interrupt your Shmona Esrei. But, if you did, it doesn't mean that you go back to the beginning. That doesn't affect that. Obviously, the only case you're allowed to be masik is if the thing's going to kill you, which a cardiac emergency calls it the same equivalent to me, to be called fast. And in such a case, you wouldn't go back. You have to stop, but you don't go back to the beginning. Okay. So anyway, so the Gemara initially suggested that the two opinions are simply the question, it's a case where you waited long enough, like you waited long enough while the urine was dripping until it finally stopped and it was 6 minutes beyond the length of your Shmona Esrei, and therefore one opinion says, Shalti and the Gemara school has to go back, and one says not. So the Gemara says no, it's a case where you didn't even wait that long, and the machlokas has nothing to do with Shalti and the Gemara school or not, because everybody agrees if you waited long enough, you'd have to go back. And the debate is, what happens if, what is your status during that time? What is your status during that time? So what Tosfos had raised the question, the fact that the Gemara chooses to go down the path of saying everybody holds Shalti Dei Gemara Skula has to go back to the beginning, and the Gemara, Tosfos assumes, could have equally have said the opposite, and therefore the fact that it chose this path tells you that we passed in Shalti Dei Gemara Skula has to go back to the beginning. So then Tosfos had a problem with the Gemara that talks about Kiyas Shofar and Megillah. So Tosfos came up with this answer. If there's a difference between a situation where you could be doing it if you choose not to do it, where you don't have to go back to the beginning, as opposed to a situation where you are not suitable, where you're not able to do it, so then you do have to go back to the beginning. But Tosfos now at the end is going to come and challenge the initial premise of the question, which was that the Gemara had a choice which path to go down. It could have said, as it did, everybody holds Shalti Dei Gemara Skula has to go back. And they argue about this. And it could just as well have said, everybody agrees that Shalti Dei Gemara Skula doesn't have to go back, and they argue about this. Meaning the assumption of Tosfos initially is that these two issues are totally unrelated to one another. In other words, delay is one issue. And then if you're not suitable in the interim, regardless of how much time goes by, everybody would agree you do have to restart, except for there's a debate whether this person is considered truly not a gafra chasi when at that stage. You get to the end of Tosfos, and he says the following. It's about six lines before Tosfos ends. Again, on Chafez and the base, the deeper mask of the third Tosfos, deeper mask of Ella. So I begin with the words Rabbeinu Yehuda Perish. Rabbeinu Yehuda explained. I'm just going to make sure with the correction. The Tosfos, just to understand, but forget why. For the moment, ignore the why. He's going to explain it in a second. But the what is, he says, the Gemara did not have a choice. It could not have said, everybody agrees in Ochoz al Rosh, and they're arguing in a case where you actually did wait longer than the time that would take you to finish. Right? The Gemara said, everybody agrees, Shah Kadeli Gemara Skula does have to go back to the beginning, and this is a case where it wasn't Shah. He didn't wait that long, and argue about something else. Suppose the Rabbeinu Yehuda says the Gemara could not have gone and said the other way. That everybody agrees that Shah Kadeli Gemara Skula does not have to go back to the beginning. And it's a case where Shah, he waited long enough. And one opinion says he's a Gavra Chazi, one says Lofa. So why is that? So the question is why? What if you establish that, if you can demonstrate that the Gemara had no choice, then you undermine the force to Paskin, Shalti Dei Gemara Skula has to go back. Because the fact that the Gemara chose that path was because it had no choice. Not because it had a choice of going down either path, Shalti Dei Gemara Skula, everybody agrees, is Chol Zon Rosh, everybody agrees, is not Chol Zon Rosh. It only had one choice to go down, and therefore that the Gemara's choice, the Gemara's lack of choice, the Gemara's words don't tell you how to pass them. So what's the reason? He says, the ha l'chulei alma, hava gabe chazi, kevan de'eno chozo l'rosh. That's the line. The line is, everybody agrees that he would be considered a gabe chazi, kevan de'eno chozo l'rosh. So well, that's the line that you have to explain. Ava vadai, he hava matzala neymar hachi hava amalai. And it's really, we would pass him, Shah today the Gemara Skula doesn't go back to the beginning. And if the Gemara had the choice of going down that path saying, and they argue with this, the Gemara would have done that, but it couldn't. And the reason it couldn't is because if it had said, everybody agrees, Shah today Ligmar Eskula is not Chozal Rosh, you don't have to go back, then he would be a Gavra Chazi. Which is strange. What's the connection between the two?
What is that, sir?
Now, why does the fact that Shalti Dei Gemara Skula mean you don't have to go back to the beginning, why does that mean that everybody has to agree that he's a Gavra Chazi? Right? Presumably, they're discussing, is he fit to daven, not fit to daven because the urine is dripping? Right? The Mayim Arshosis and Albert Chaz. So what's the issue? Why does he think that the two are tied together? That's the question. I'm willing to take suggestions. I think I know what he's driving at. Unfortunately, there's no, the one methodologically when you're learning, one very good place to look is in the Tosfos HaRosh, which is the version of the Balei HaTosfos that the Rosh had And sometimes there's a little bit different, or it's a little clearer, there's a little more information. Sometimes the Tosafim on our page were edited by the printers to make them fit. So sometimes you might be missing information, and you can supplement there and you say, ah, this is probably what it meant. And sometimes Tosafim Rush disagree. It actually differs from our Tosafim. It doesn't illuminate, but it disputes. But often it will help illuminate things with sometimes a couple of extra words. But there is no, at least as far as I can tell, in my version of Tosafim Rush in the back of the Gemara, there is no explanation. So I think what Rabbeinu Yehuda is assuming, and this is obviously a chinish, is that on some level, you can't daven, obviously, when Mayim are shosus and alberka. But the question of whether the person is considered a gavra lochazi is actually, we would say the following. To borrow from a Gemara we're about to read. A person is not allowed to daven if they sense they need to use the bathroom. And the Gemara is talking about, I don't know if it would be both what we call gedolim and ktanim, defecating and urinating, or only gedolim, only defecating. But the Gemara says you're not allowed to start davening if you sense that you have a need. But if you do, and you daven and you finish, it depends upon how long you could have held it in. If you could have held it in a certain shear, the Gemara says today parsa, which is pretty long, that's like 72 minutes. So then tfilas o tfila. It's not tfilas o tfila. So that's very interesting. You have a person who is able to get through davening without, they can deal with it during the course of davening. And nonetheless, it's tfila, it's toeva, because they couldn't have held it long enough. So what that Gemara suggests is that timing, my ability to restrain my bodily functions a certain amount of time, even though I'm not actually engaged in those bodily functions right now, has an impact on what my status is. So I think that Rabbeinu Yehuda believed that if there were no time limit on Sila, then there's no such thing as a Gavra Dolochazi. Of course you're not allowed to daven when Mayim shows from Alberka. But the fact that you couldn't, and that's worse than the Gemara we're about to in the Chof Gemara, you couldn't even hold it in during davening. But if in fact there's no time limit on the davening, if interrupting in the middle doesn't constitute an interruption that you would have to restart the tefillah, then while it's true you can't daven at a particular point, that doesn't make you a gavra d'lochazi in tefillah. Just as the Gemara later will say that defining whether it's appropriate to daven, when you have to, probably only defecating, what you can already be a gavra d'lochazi because you can't last a certain amount of time, even longer than actually that you actually need to daven. So that means that we're not looking at necessarily the moment when your body is performing its function, but we're sort of looking at what is your time frame looking into the future. And if there's no limit on your time frame, at least for, maybe only for ketanim, only for urinating, so then maybe we say, you're not a gavra d'lochazi. You're not a gavra d'lochazi because, so what if you have to urinate in the middle? So you just resume afterwards. It doesn't matter how long it would take you. It's irrelevant because Shachid Ilu Gemar Skula does not have to go back to the beginning. So I think that's what Rabbeinu Yehuda means, that once it had to go, if the Gemara said, if Shehiyah mattered, if Shehiyah could break up a tefillah, then we can talk about, okay, now it turns out you have to urinate, but it's not, or you're dripping urine, are you a gavra, is that really so possible? Because Minat Torah, you could still daven at the time, or not. But once you say, but if you would be not chazi, since you have to interrupt things, and since a time gap potentially could undo your tefillah, therefore, we can have a debate whether you're a gavra chazi or gavra lo chazi. But once you say that you could take all day, you could take breaks, doesn't matter, shakti limas kula, so the fact that you might need to take a break for this as well does not mean that your tefillah is no good in the first. Doesn't mean you're a gavra d'lochazi. And therefore, once the Gemara says, ahulei alma shakti limas gemara kula, doesn't have to go back to the beginning, the Gemara can no longer say, and they're arguing about whether gavra chazi lo chazi. Because once you say that shakti limas kula doesn't have to go back to the beginning, by definition, he's a gavra chazi. So therefore, the only path the Gemara could go down to discuss this question of whether he's a gavra chazi, gavra lo chazi, was to say, everybody agrees, shakei ligmar skula has to go back to the beginning, and this is a case where he didn't take that long, and now the only question is the fact that, even though he didn't wait that long, the fact that at this point, he cannot daven, does that mean he's a gavra lo chazi, and he has to start over or not? That's what I think Rabbeinu Yehuda means. It would have been nice if he had spelled it out. I mean, perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps there's a different explanation. But what is clear from a methodological perspective, I think this runs throughout the Tosfos, is that the first approach of Tosfos assumes that choice A1 and A and not A were both paths the Gemara could have gone down. The fact that it chose A tells you that we paskin A, and then whatever we do with the next fork in the road is a separate issue. Whereas Rabbeinu Yehuda's approach is to say that, no, A was a choice to go down, not A, you couldn't have gone down, and therefore the fact that the Gemara goes down path A doesn't tell you how we should paskin.
So it can't be that Mar Tavar, Chose the Rosh, that he holds that he's not a Gavra Chazi.
It can't be Mar Tavar in a Chose the Rosh.
If you say Chose the Rosh, then that implies that the Tfila was not a Tfila, right?
Correct.
Why can't you say that that Daya believed that he was a Gavra, he was not a suitable person?
No, I think that Daya would certainly hold. Now, if you hold Chose LaRoche, you can now have generally speaking, you can have a debate now. Okay, so this guy didn't, Chose LaRoche means only if you waited long enough, only if you saw today the Gemara's Kula. So now you can have a debate that even, and this is what the Gemara says, even though Lo Shaha, right, it didn't take that long, it took a minute until the urine stopped dripping. It took 1 minute, so he wasn't shocked at the Gemara's Kula, so you're not going to tell him he has to go back on those grounds. But now you can still debate. Granted, if I stopped in the middle of my davening, put on my cell phone to have a conversation, so that's one thing. If I wasn't shocked that it was cool up, of course you're not supposed to do that unless it's an emergency. But now I can go back and finish the davening because I couldn't really daven. It's nothing that was my choice. But this person who couldn't daven because my Mershosis in Malbirkov, so you could, even though it's not shock, it is in my school law, there could be a different grounds of disqualification. One ground of disqualifying your tefila is if you don't finish it a certain amount of time when you're taking like a totally blank break in the middle. Another ground of disqualification is that during the middle of your tefila, you become unsuitable to daven. You also have to, go back to the beginning. But Rabbeinu Yehuda's point is that once you say that an interruption of any amount of time does not undo the first part of your tefila, then you can't call the person a Mayim Shosel Birkov a Gavra Delo Chazi. So let him just finish doing what he does, and then he'll go back, and then he'll just continue, because time gaps don't matter. So in a sense, almost nothing matters. What happened in the interim stays in the interim, and you just resume afterwards. That's what I think he means. Okay.
Halacha
l'maisa. I believe that the Ramat Sakh, I should reconfirm that next week. I looked at last week. The Ramat Sakh is like the first opinion of Tosfos, that there's no difference between Megillah and Kriya Shema and Tzila, and that it all depends upon whether or not you're a Gavra Chazi or not. And if there's something in between, like for example, if you were, the Gemara we'll talk about later in the parak, if you're walking the Mavos Hamas Nefer, so if you're walking through an area, you know, a long alleyway where there's clearly a lot of human waste there and you can smell it. So you're not allowed, you have to stop saying your Kriya Shema then. So if you're in that situation long enough, then you have to go back to the beginning of Kriya Shema. But if it's just that you pause to handle a cardiac emergency or even for a cause that maybe wasn't justified, then you would not have to go back to the beginning.
One quick question. So for someone who holds a mitzvah in the Tzricha Kavana, why would you necessarily have to wait a parsa? Because I would think that if you have to defecate, but you haven't, your body is not per se disqualified because there's no tsoa, there's nothing sort of disgusting. I would have assumed it's more a question of kavana, which is why there's a parsa shear, which is unreasonably long, because they're trying to guard against people really being more focused on their physical needs than davening by putting in a long barrier. But if you don't have to have kavana for davening, why should it matter? Your body's not impure merely because you have to go to the bathroom.
So I have a suspicion. I haven't explored this to see for sure, but it's explicit in postgame, that this question of, the Gemara's will say, we'll read in a moment, hanitzrach l'mekava, one who needs to use the bathroom, is not a function of, I don't know if you want to call it gavra d'lachazi, but it's a function of hikon likras alokecha Yisrael. The Gemara's going to quote that pasuk. That when you prepare to encounter God, to speak to God, so you have to be in a certain kind of preparation, and therefore that maybe you need to feel it. It's not a. I don't think that would apply. I have to check. I don't think it applies to Kriya Shema and the mitzvahs. I'm not 100% sure. I have to take a look. The Gemara only states it in this context, and it gives at one point close to that pasuk that this is a question of being, you know, not in a negative way, prepare to meet your maker. So I think that it's unique to feelness. I don't think it's about kavana. I think it's about, this is just not a way, it's not a space to be in. And it's undoubtedly, I have to imagine on some level related to kavana, but not whether you did or didn't have kavana while you were doing it, but having your body in a state where it's normal not to have kavana, you're just not supposed to be dominant that way.
But perhaps you're focusing on going to the bathroom. Which bathroom you're going to use? You're focusing more on the bathroom needs than on the davening.
Marshall, you're correct in that sense, that if you really have to go, you're probably going to have a hard time focusing. The only question you can ask is that the most of the rest of us, when we daven, how much focus do we have either? So obviously you might say that the difference is that one is impossible to focus, where one is just our weakness as human beings that we don't focus. Okay, we'll see that in a second. So that's Shaka the Gemara Skula. We're on the first white line in the Gemara, on the Chassim Amor Aleph. Gemara says, Han Rabbanu, Hanitzrach l'nekavav al yispalo. If a person needs to defecate, they shouldn't daven. So this is the version of the Braisa. The standard interpretation, Tfilasa Toeva, is that the Tfilas no good. And Tosa spoke about this briefly on the previous page. We assume Tfilasa Toeva means you have to daven again. In this case, use the bathroom, you have to repeat daven, even if you finish davening before you actually went to the bathroom. Now, there are two versions of the Gemara. They're both the same thing. It's just how the pieces of this information will present it. So the first version we just read is the Braisa that just says if you're a person who needs to defecate may not daven, and if they did, the davening is invalid. Now, on that Braisa, Amar Rav Zvid, V'itema Rav Yehuda, lo shanu ela she'eno yachol lishos bi'atzmo. That's only if you can't hold it in. Avon yachol lishos bi'atzmo, tfila so tfila. Then your tfila is valid. You shouldn't have daven, but we say v'mispalo tfila so tfila. So we have a braisa that says you shouldn't daven. If you daven, it's invalid. You have Rav Zvid or Rav Yehuda saying that's only if you couldn't hold it in. And then the third piece is the ad kama. How long is it able to hold it in? Amar Rav Sheshis ad parsa. Rav Sheshis is a parsa, which is 4 mil. A mil is usually assumed to be 18 minutes, unless you maybe the briskers hold it like 22 and a half minutes or something like that. So it means you have to have hold it in for a good long while. And obviously, I think what should be stated with a given is that any particular person doesn't know right now whether within the next 72 minutes I'm going to go to the bathroom. It means the person senses they need to go to the bathroom. Could be I don't sense anything now. 20 minutes I sense from now and I have to go to the bathroom and I go 10 minutes later. You wouldn't say, well, retroactively, my tefillah is invalid. It means when I set the daven, do I need to use the bathroom? One of the things that I think most of the Gemara is going to say, we'll say a little later here. I don't know if this is a function of just the way the world in which we live and the accessibility of bathrooms for the most part in our society, but they'll talk about the idea that a person should be bodate in the cover, right? We normally, most of us, I think, we have a sense of our bodies, and if we feel we need to go to the bathroom, we usually go to the bathroom, or we'll soon go to the bathroom, and otherwise we don't stop to think about it. But they talk about, like, before entering a meal, the Gemara is going to talk, I think it's what the Gemara talks about. Before you go into the meal, you should do a little exercise, you know, walk back and forth. You know, they give you two different, the same shear, but you know, how long you walk back and forth, how many times, as if you're supposed to do that before you sit down. I don't think that's people's common practice today, that before I sit down, let me contemplate a little bit and see if I need to go to the bathroom. And again, I don't know if that's that we're lacking in something that they had, or it's just because for them going to the bathroom in the middle of the meal was a really big deal, right? Because you have to go somewhere, who knows where, in order to do it. Whereas for us, typically in the middle of the meal, you go down, you know, 15 feet to the nearest bathroom in the home or something like that, and therefore we're just less sensitive to the issue. But it's clear. The Gemara is talking about a situation where a person senses they're going to need to go to the bathroom, and then the question is, does it disqualify the tefillah? So we have three stages. The Braisa that said, you're not allowed to daven if your daven is invalid. Rav Zvid who said, that's only if you couldn't wait. And then Rav Sheshis comes along and tells us how long to wait. Now the Gemara gives the alternative version. It's not different in substance. It's just the stages in which it was presented. Ika the masni la masnisa. There are those who actually taught in the Braisa itself. So what out with the first version? presents in the name of Rav Zvi, Tam Rav Yehuda, is actually part of the Braisa in the second version. And then the Ad Kama, how long do you have to be able to hold it in? Amar Rav Zvi, Tam Rav Yehuda, Ad Parsha. And Rav Sheshes got left out. In other words, there are three steps in the first stage, 1, 2, and 3. First is the Braisa, the second is Rav Zvi, Tam Rav Yehuda, the third is Rav Sheshes, and in the second version, the Braisa contains step 1 and 2, and Rav Zvi, Tam Rav Yehuda, just do step number 3. There's no difference in terms of meaning. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonasan. Hanitzrach l'nekavav hareza lo yisalo. So Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, the Amora, cites in the name of his Rabbi Rabbi Yonasan, and these are a pair who go together often. So he says that someone needs to go to the bathroom, like the Braisa, shouldn't daven, mishum, shenemar hikon l'kras alokecha Yisrael. Right. The truth is, the pasuk in Amos, when it uses the expression, is a little more like the modern use of the expression, prepare to meet your maker. Not quite, you know, it's prepare for judgment, is the way it would work in Amos. But Chazal take the same, that they take it here in the Gemara and Shabbos in the first parak, about how you're supposed to dress for davening. There's an idea of Hikon Lekras Al-Kafi Yisrael, you know, in the yeshiva world. I mean, sometimes it looks, you know, a little funny, you know, when they could be wearing, you know, jeans and a polo shirt, but they put on a suit jacket. But the idea of somehow putting on a jacket or maybe a hat, and a hat might be a different issue, but it's not really a bifa, is you're making some kind of hachana for davening. Putting on pants, yes, correct. It's all a question of your starting point, Marshall.
A gartel, would that
be? A gartel has another reason.
Because of separation.
The separation between Levi Avor, which we're going to learn about in the upcoming studios. But today, because most of us, wear pants and have a belt and so on, you don't need that. A gartel could still fulfill the function. You know, for most people, again, it's not what we would have chosen, but it might fulfill the function, you know, what people once upon a time, what once meant something else, now fulfill the function of just keep on the cross on the cast.
Rabbi, this raises a question of not uncommon medical conditions of people who have overactive bladder, where they feel like they need to go urinate constantly, but they don't actually have much to urinate, or, you know, feeling like you need to defecate and you don't have much to. So is it a question of the urgency and the time, the it takes up your mind and your concentration, or is it a question of your body not being?
So I want to hold off on answering that question. I'll give you my initial reaction. My initial reaction is the latter, but I would like to see what Poskim. I know what Poskim write about certain issues, like, you know, when a person has a catheter in a bag and what the status of the abdomen there. But I owe you at least to go back and see what I can find.
That's almost the opposite extreme of the question.
Correct, right? The person really doesn't have to, but it feels like they have to. And so I'd like to see if I can find the issue explicitly addressed most posting. And part of the issue is that if a person is always like that, so we're probably going to say, I don't want to say they're honest. I mean, this is kind of honest, and that's the only way they can happen, right? Let's say a person could actually hold it in. I think it seems obvious, of course, you would tell them to daven. You wouldn't tell them about the chile yishim daven, because that's the only way they can daven. And then the question is, what kind of accommodations, you know, would that situation be a different situation? That's what I'd like to see if anybody explicitly addresses that.
Hi, grandfather.
Yes.
Grandfather is had prostate surgery. In those days, he stayed in the hospital for quite a while. And he had a bag, catheter in a bag. And he said, ask the Rebbe if I can put on fillin and daven. Fillin treated goof notchy, and the davening too. So you want me to call my pelvic chicken? Yeah.
Okay.
So I called the Rav, and the Rav said, actually, tefillin tzrichin guf naki, he shouldn't really be putting on tefillin. But I met your grandfather once, and I saw the kind of person he is, very malicious person, never missed morning davening. As far as I was concerned, all his life, in shul, he said, tell him to cover the bag with a blanket, and he should put on tefillin and daven, and he should have a refuah.
Okay. So I think that
him the in other words,
right,
his religious performance will be part of his refuah. You deny him that.
So that's a very antinomian from my perspective. I think that they're post-skim who are lenient precisely because the urine is, in fact, even in the bag, you can see this covered over. And therefore, there's no issue of reich ra, and it's really, we're going to see just that the kiss can be put in still another certain circumstance to cover it, so it might be the same thing. I mean, I think they're probably halachic ground. I'd say that I'm both admire the answer, but I blanched a little bit at the antinomianism of it.
But, I mean, given that sort of they keep that, you know, now it's very different definition and their argument for the modern bathroom is not a bathroom, it's actually not critically why catheter, I mean, it actually is not a good monkey, right? Like, I think
there are post-skim who say that.
The question by extension, if somebody, unfortunately, God forbid, ultimately becomes fecally incontinent and it's for the rest of their life, I mean, is there an argument that wearing sort of very high quality adult diapers that hold in the feces, that hold in the, you know, somehow, because is the pachalach of it if you become fecal incontinent at an advanced age, that you can never daven again, you can never pronounce the word again, because at any moment, you might be incontinent.
I have to bring answers back. Well, unfortunately, we're going to be in the sugya a while. There's a lot of material. So, you know, before the end, I'll have to, there are a few blocks that deal with various aspects of this. So I owe you some answers. I'd like to look at what post came right.
You have 30 years before you don't get anybody at this year. So you
can right, sure.
That's not true.
What?
40 years.
The fact that the Gemara says, okay.
Very no
the fact that the Gemara says that you have to, to me that seems like it's a surrogate for the presence or absence of an actual, like, you know, a goof nucky. It's not a mindset issue, because the Gemara could have just said,
you know, I don't think it's a kavanah.
So
the question, So the Gemara continues here. The Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Rav Yonasan. My dichsiv, Shmor Rag Lecha Kasher Telech Obeso Elokim. So the whole pasuk actually, Shmor Rag Lecha Kasher Telech Obeso Elokim. The Karov the Shmola Mites Haksilim Zabach. So first I'm just going to translate the pasuk into Pshat. Pshat is, be careful when you go to the house of God. Because the assumption is you're going to bring sacrifices, because the karov l'shmoa, it's better to listen to God. God prefers that you listen to him rather than the fools who just bring sacrifices, right? This is a critique of empty sacrifice. As Shmuel HaNavi says to Shaul, halo shmoa mizevach tov lahakshiv mechelet mri'im. Right? Listening is better than a good sacrifice, and paying heed is more important than the fat of these wonderful animals. That's the same idea. The karov b'shmoa mitesach shivim zavach. That's what the pshat is. So now Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Rav Yonasan starts with the following drasha. Shmor atzmecha shelo techata. Watch yourself so that you don't, in the first place, so that you don't sin. So that you don't have to go to the house of God to bring a korban. If you don't sin in the first place, then you won't have to go bring a sacrifice. The im techata, hove korban lefana. But if you do sin, then you'll have to go. Telecho beis ha'elokim. V'karov l'shmoa, what does that mean? Amar Rava, have a karov l'shmoa divrei chachamim, she'im chotim neviim karban ve'osim tshuva. You should listen to what the sages say, that you don't just bring the karban, you have to do tshuva. Mites haksilem zavach, al tehi kiksilem shechotim, u'meviim karban the Enam's Osim Shuba. They bring a carbon, but it's formal, very formal, formalistic. Then the pasuk ends, Ki Enam Yodim Lasos Ra. They don't know, literally, how to do bad. So the Gemara immediately says, one second, Yachi, Tzadikim they do. Tzadikim, what do you mean? The Enam Yodim Lasos Ra. So the Gemara says, no. Ela, Al Tehi Kichsilim Shechotim Umavi and Carbon. The Enam Yodim Il Mahalatoba Himavim Himal Hara Himavim. They bring a carbon, but they don't bring on the good things or the bad things. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it kind of reminds you sometimes, on occasion, on a rare occasion, only once in a blue moon, my wife gets annoyed at me, and finally at some point I apologize, and she's not happy because I don't really understand what I'm apologizing for. This might sound familiar to some, I don't know. So that's what it is. They don't know whether they're bringing on Ra or Allah Tova. So they have to know. You have to know what you're bringing on. So the Gemara then says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, first you have to understand what you did wrong, then you can bring a carbon. Then you can apologize. Okay. And now, what's this drasha doing here? Well, for starters, it's from Shmuel bar Nachmani and Yonasan, but it's really also here for the next line, which is a different interpretation. Rav Ashi, the Tamer of Chanina bar Papa Amar, Shmor Rag Lecha is Shmor Nikabecha v'Shah Shata Omei B'Shri Lefana. As Rashi explains, there's the biblical expression. And this, by the way, the biblical expression, I don't know which it's for, it might be for defecating, is lahaseich es raglav. There's the story by Shaul, when he enters the cave, right, when David and his men are hiding in the cave. Why did Shaul go in the cave? He wasn't just flunking. He was, he needed to relieve himself. So he came to the Mara, lahaseich es raglav. And the feet are sometimes used as a euphemism for the private areas. They're used in another context. When you describe the child in the tochcha, uveshul yasaha yotzeish mi bein ragleha, from between her legs. So therefore, shemor raglecha, kasher telecha besokim, before you go to daven, make sure that your body is in the proper shape.
And the phrase is mei raglayim.
And mei raglayim, yes. Correct. So that's why probably the second part of Shmuel Nachmani, the first part is relevant, the kikon likrash velo kafe Yisrael, and then the last part, on the pasuk that he interprets, Shmuel Nachmani, or Yonasan happens to interpret in a different vein, so Rav Ashi interprets it as relating specifically to our issue. Okay, so this I believe ends the discussion of a person davening, doing other things when they need to use the bathroom. And now we're going to talk about what happens, and this is only relevant to the men, wearing tefillin when you have to go to the bathroom. So the braisa begins the following. Tana Rabbanan, Hanitnas Lebeis Hakisei. If a person is entering a Beis HaKiseh, now imagine their Beis HaKiseh, as Rashi explained, was in the field, but and there wasn't necessarily a hole in the ground where the waste got washed away. So basically, the area already had had human waste in it. Cholaitz tefillah v'richos dalet amos v'nichnas. You take your tefillin off 4 amos away. Right now, we're not talking about where you put them, but rather where you take them off. You take them off 4 amos away, and then you can walk to the area. And Amar Rav Acha bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav Sheshe, Lo Shanu Ela Beis HaKiseh Kavua. That's only if it's a Beis HaKiseh Kavua. Now what that means, Rashi says, it's already been used. However, a Beis HaKiseh Arai, if it's haphazard, literally, but Rashi says, it's, when you, after you use it, it's called Beis HaKiseh Kavua. But until you use it, there's nothing there. It's called the Beis HaKiseh Arai. Cholet, you take them off the Nifdal Altar, and you can, immediately, defecate. Shuyotse, once you're finished, Marathis Dalaramos Amanichon. You, have to walk 4 amos away before putting them on. Now that you've used it, it's considered a Beis HaKiseh. Now the Gemara says the following.
Why don't you have to take them off as soon as you have to go to the bathroom? Because it's not,
a guf naki would mean a person is actually relieving himself or passing gas. A person may feel the need to do so, but they're not considered for the purpose of tefillin. Now, the problem is that if you do certain things wearing tefillin, that's a violation of Kedushas tefillin. The fact that you feel the need to do something, that's your warning sign to take your tefillin off, but that doesn't mean that that's considered you might say the following. When you have that urge to defecate or the like, and then you daven, so going, you know, if you are into the future, you might be an Eino Gufnaki, it's inappropriate to start davening and beginning a process. But right now, you still have a Gufnaki, and therefore you're wearing your tefillin already. Like, it would be a strong argument, which nobody I think would. Don't put your tefillin on when you're feeling that. You know, even though you might have to put them on and take them off before you actually have to use that. So now the Gemara says, Hibaylehu, Ma'u sheyikoneis adam betfillin lebeis hakiseh kavua but lahashvimayim. Are you allowed to enter wearing a tefillin just to urinate? And the question really could be asked almost, is it permissible to urinate when we're wearing a tefillin? Right? That's not quite the same thing. So the Gemara says, Ravina Shari and Rav Adar Bar Matana Asaros. There was a machlokas between Ravina and Rav Adar Bar Matana. Asru Shailu al Rava. They came and asked Rava. Amar Lahu Asur. Chayshin Shema Yifne Bahem. The way most Rishonim have the gers, they don't have the next word. We're afraid that the person is going to forget or going to feel the urge to defecate, and they're going to do that while they're wearing their tefillin. The Amri law, that those who say Shema Yafiyach Bahem, which is they're going to pass gas. I guess when the various muscles are engaged in doing their work, so sometimes they'll operate in tandem, and the person will end up passing gas while wearing tefillin, which is inappropriate for the kedusha of tefillin. That's why you're not allowed to sleep in tefillin, and the like. And that's why someone who has stomach issues at that particular time is positive for wearing tefillin, because they can't keep it. It's often impossible to have what's called a guf naki. Okay.
But that's only in a kavua place. But if it's not a kavua, if it's not an established place,
so,
then it's permissible.
So it sounds as if, you know, if you take out the girsa of Shema Yafiyach Bahem and you only have what many Shema have is Shema Yifneh, so a Beis HaKiseh Arai, you're less likely to do so because nobody has done it before there. So in other words, you go to a particular place and you can imagine, right? You can imagine that if you're out hiking, let's say, what you would need, the privacy you would want in order to defecate is different than if you just need, certainly for men, just the urine. So that may be, it sounds from the Gemara that there's no isser if it's not in the Beis HaKiseh of urinating one's stomach.
That's not halacha.
I don't remember. You know, it's not, the truth is because I think, I have to look at what it says in Shulchan Aruch. I didn't see notice anything we showed him. But we don't usually have that question because if you go to the bathroom to urinate, it doesn't make a difference. We're going to take our stolen off either way. But I don't know.
What would be the start of behind saying that Kalashal is under her, which is just, you know, ethane, whatever, whereas urination is with her?
So I think part of the issue may be smell. Okay. So now the Gemara talks about what do you do with your tefillin when you take them off. So today, again, our world is entirely different. Firstly, we only wear tefillin in shul. So what do you do with your tefillin? We have to the answer is you take them off, you put them down in your place, on your chair, on your table, whatever's in front of you. You drink the bathroom, you come back. What's the big deal? But if you're talking about people who might have been traveling, who might have been wearing tefillin all day, and they're on the way, it's not like they have a place to put the tefillin down. What do you do with them? So the Braith just says, Tanya Idach, Hanichnas Lebeis HaKisei Kavua, presumably you go behind a wall to do it, and if there are like holes in the wall, you put it on the side that's facing the Mishra Sarabim. And then when you finish, you move 4 amos away from the base. You put them on. That's Beishamas. I presume they don't want you to carry them into the side. They're trying to avoid you carrying them into the place where the bathroom actually is. Uveis Hillel Omrim, no. Ochas in Beyodah V'Nichnas, you actually hold them in your pen. That's the way to protect them. And then Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ochas in Bebigdo V'Nichnas, he says you hold them in your garment. Initially the Gemara thought that like you wrap it in some part of your garment. Now it's not a pocket. If we're a pocket, the question the Gemara is about to ask makes no sense. Because probably the best thing to do if you have room is you put it in your pocket, and that's the best way. So the Gemara says, immediately, this is not part of it interrupts the braces to ask the question. The Gemara says, the big dose al kataitach. What do you mean? Put it in your garment. Zim de mishtali lehu benachli. So like if you're holding it in here like this, you're going to forget. Pull your hand away. Your tefillin falls on the floor. Ela ema ochas and the big dose over the other minute. So you wrap it in the garment and you hold that in your hand. That's more appropriate, covering the tefillin that way. And then, umanicham, so this sounds as if you're going to take it out of your hand, so then you put them in the holes in the wall that are facing inside towards the Beis HaKiseh. You should put them on the outside. You want to be careful because otherwise someone might take them. They're not that they'll steal them, you know, fill in, but you could end up in an uncomfortable situation. As the Gemara tells a terrible story, he left his tefillin in one of those nooks, and then what happened? Ubas zona achas, the prostitute walked by in the talakan. She took them, and then ubas the beis hamedrash, The Umra, Re'uma Nasan Li Ploni Bishkara. Today she would just post it on Facebook. But then she walks into the Beit Medrash and says, you see what somebody gave me is my star? Kevin Shashem Osapam Etach, all on the Rosh Hagag, the Nafal Umes. The truth is, it's not any different than public shaming of, you know, Facebook or anything else like that. And so the Talmud goes up to the roof, and he falls off the roof. Nafal, right? We would say he jumped off the roof, but they say he falls off the roof. Umes, and he died. The Umsa Shai Eskinu, So it sounds like, I don't know why you can't put it in the Chorin HaSmuchim, the Beis HaKiseh, but certainly it was at that point they first said you should no longer leave them outside of the Beis HaKiseh because someone might take them, and having them stolen is one thing that would be aggravating enough, but this was potentially much worse. Okay. That mode of suicide, I guess it's a pretty logical mode of suicide, but that's kind of the standard rabbinic form, is you go up to the roof and you jump off. I don't, you know, I guess it's probably, I guess today, you know, the difference between someone trying, you know, on a lift line to slash their wrist versus a gun is a much more effective technique for suicide. It's much less messy and much less difficult to do, but I guess jumping off the roof for them was the closest equivalent to having a gun. Okay. So now the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan. Are we shown how you manichim tzilin b'chorin asmuch on the Beit HaKiseh? Initially they would put it in the chorim, the holes in the wall that were closest to the Beis HaKiseh, ubon achbarim v'not v'nosam. I guess the rodents were not found on the outside because there were lots of people walking on the outside. They were scared of people. But on the inside, there weren't so many people. So there's one guy, so the rodents would come and eat, and take the tefillin, or eat them. Then, hiskinim shinanichim asam b'chalonas hasmuchos hasharabim. Put them on the other side, where the rodents don't have free reign. But then Uvan Ovechachim in the Lusam, so the passersby would take them. I'm not sure what the analogy is, if it's in the people and the rodents. But that was the next problem. So finally, Skinushi Ochazim Be'ad of the Nechtas. And finally said, okay, you keep it on your person when you're in the Beis HaKiseh. Amar Rabbi Niyasha Beredi Rabbi Shua Ben Levi, the halacha is Gololon Kemin Sefer, but Ochazim Be'amino Keneged Levo. You wrap them up in their straps. You use the straps as if, like, you're, I don't know, what do you call it? You wrap the straps around the tefillin. They probably didn't have the little boxes that we do. But you sort of cover the tefillin up with the straps. You hold it in your hand, and you enter. And then Amar Rav Yosef Bar Miyomi, Amar Rav Nachman, Uvad Shalotei Ritzua Yosani Tachas Yadot Tepa. Provided that, the strap shouldn't be sticking out of your grip. And remember, that tefillin will probably be very, very small. I mean, you can still find small tefillin, but most of our tefillin today typically are probably far bigger than the tefillin they wore. The Gemara talks about having room on your head to put two tefillin back to back, you know, in really what is a spot that's not that big. We're not, you know, and they were smaller than we are, anatomically a little bit. So the tefillin were much smaller, and you keep it wrapped in your hand, and the straps shouldn't protrude more than a tefillin. The reason for that is that the straps of tefillin have kedusha. Right? If you lose a little piece of your strap, it's ready to cut off, you don't throw it out, you put it in shemus. I mean, people often put their tzitzis in shemus, so you do meeker, then you don't have to do that with tzitzis. Tzitzis doesn't have kedusha. Once it's been cut off, once it's not the use of the mitzvah anymore, but still, the straps have kedusha as well. Rashi explains the reason is that, I think it's halacha moshem Sinai, certainly that the straps have to be black, but he says the ritzuas are used to form the name of God, because on the shorosh we have even if you think about it, even the tefillin itself, the bias that holds the cloth itself is not really the tefillin. The tefillin are the parshios. The bias, like the Ritzuos, are what we would call Tashmishei Kedusha. So on the outside of the Shel Rosh, you have a shin, and then the knot on the back is supposed to be a single dalid. Some people make a square, and they call it a double dalid, but probably the right thing to do is a single dalid on the back, and then the knot by the Shoyat is the Yud. So the tefillin straps have Kedusha, so they ideally also shouldn't be exposed. So not more than a tefach should it be sticking out of your hand. Yes.
Since people wore tefillin all day, and this is presumably a daily occurrence, why wouldn't they just ask them that you need to bring a piece of cloth with you and just wrap them through? The issue is kisui. This issue of wrapping them in the straps and holding your hand on the straps together, it's completely ridiculous.
So, as we'll see in the next slide, people might very well have done that, but what if you forgot? What do you do? That's going to happen. You can be sure that's going to happen. The Gemara then continues, Uvalayla. So the question is, why not put them down on the ground? So the answer is, it's a bizarre thing for the tzilin to put them down on the ground. The Braisa says, where the Brisa, the Gemara says, Uvalaila, I'm sorry, no, I skipped over a line. Amar Bizeira, Loshanu El Sheshar Sayon Loshan. That's only if there's enough time during the day that you're going to put them back on afterwards. Aval, Ein Shahu Sayon Loshan, if you don't have enough time, Osulahem Kimin Kif, Tafach Umanich. You make sure that they're in a bag, which is more than a tapach in space. The reason for that is you want to, even though if I put it in a bag and the tapach either doesn't have a tapach in space or it does, and I put it down on the ground, what's the difference? The difference is that when something has a certain amount of space, it looks like it's a separate rishus, so it's not on the ground. It's in this rishus. If you don't have a tapach in there, so then it looks more like you just put it down on the ground, even though there's a tiny barrier between.
So a tapach makes the rishus.
A tapach makes the rishus. And the Gemara is going to quote something about this later, about this idea of a separate rishus. It's going to talk about even sometimes less than a tapach is sufficient, but for the moment he says a tapach. Rashi explains, the halal tapach, halal tapach, the choshev ha-kli ohel, it's like an ohel, lahafsik v'nehem, l'karta, v'nehem l'karta. Generally speaking, at least the minimum share of an ohel to spread out tumah has to be a tapach.
Is that the whole issue with under the bed, if it's whether more than a tapach of extra space or not?
You mean whether or not that's considered mechusa?
Yeah.
Yes, but that's a little more complicated. Less than a tapach would be better in that case, but the question whether a tapach itself is a problem is not so clear. So Rabbi Zera, Amar Abba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bayom Golol into Mid Sefer, Amar Necham Bayado Keneged Vivo, that we saw already. He just says, hold it here. Uvalayla Osulahem Kiskim in Tapach Omanim. Same statement repeated by the Amorai. Then Amar Marzushla, the Item Ravashi.
Amar
Abaye. Amar Abaye, I'm sorry. Lo Shanu Ela B'Klishu Kelyan, Aval B'Klish Einan Kelyan Afilu Pachas V'Tapach. I really want to jump to the Raya. That it's only true if it's a kli that's meyuchad. It's a kli that's designated for tefillin, which generally speaking, ironically, will mamachmir on. And that you need more when it's something designated for tefillin, because it's much part of the tefillin in a sense. Like when we talk about the idea of in a room where, let's say, a husband and wife may be intimate, that you need a double covering of things. So I think, I don't remember the details, but a single covering doesn't suffice if it's the normal, let's say, tefillin vessel, that's not sufficient. Where they think if it's a covering that's not the normal thing, then that constitutes a greater form of division or hefsek or interruption, or more of a barrier. So Abaye said, if it's the normal kli, the normal thing that holds the tefillin, then you need a tefach. But if it's not the normal kli, even less than a tefach constitutes, if you're putting it on the ground, it's not on the ground, because it's not like if I put my tefillin bag on the ground, you say, oh, your tefillin's on the ground. If I put a sheet on the ground, I put tefillin on top of that, you won't say my tefillin's sitting on the ground. He says that the analogy is not that perfect, but he says, if you have, let's say, a small earthenware vessel, and the halacha by an earthenware vessel is that tumah is only contracted from the inside. And therefore, if you take an earthenware vessel and you put a seal on, you put a lid on top and you seal it, it's samit pasil. You do not, it's tumah, you can put it in ohel, in which there's a dead person, and everything inside, the content certainly means in Torah, remain tahor. And you don't have to have a tefach in the pach. Even if it's less than a tefach, it constitutes a hefsek. So by right, you shouldn't even require a tefach of interruption. Okay. The Gemara is going to go just a tiny bit further about tefillin in the bathroom. But I want to talk about, it's going to raise some very interesting theological issues about tefillin and their function, so I don't want to start that now. So let me think, are there any questions on what we've done?
If you get dressed after dark, you shower and get dressed after dark, do you put tzitzit back on?
You don't have to. There's no issa. No. I mean, you're talking about putting a talis katan on. There's no need to put a talis katan on after dark. I mean, you could argue there are shittas and rishonim who would say that if you were wearing a beged shoyom, even though it's night, you have to put tzitzis on. But if you're not wearing any beged that's four corner, so I think we really paskin it's yom versus laila. But even if you didn't, if you paskin ksus yom versus ksus laila, you don't have to go out of your way to put the tzitzis on. I my sense of the minhag is that once you're getting dressed after dark, there's no need to put on tzitzis. But I don't think it's your either.
So this tefach is considered a boundary.
Yes, between the ground.
Is that the general rule?
I don't want to say that. In other words, it really depends on each area, context and halacha to decide.
For example, going to the Beis HaKvaros, where the bodies are buried way below a tefach.
Right.
And why, you know, everybody is a tumah mitzvah.
No. That's why I don't want to go. The answer is the tumah, because if there's an oil of a tefach, I'm going to stop the recording, but I'll. If there's an oil of a tefach,